Good morning, and welcome to Manzanita Voices, the program for writers, those who want to write, and those who love the written word. You're in for an hour of interesting conversation today and a very special announcement. So pour yourself another cup of coffee, pull up a comfy chair, and get ready for a treat. My special announcement today, I just can't wait, I have to tell you right off the bat, is that our listening audience has grown by leaps and bounds. We've been so well received here in the Gold Rush Hills of California that folks back in my own home state of New York have heard about us, and a radio station back there has taken us on for a trial period. So it's my great pleasure to make the introduction. Calaveras County, California, meet Cattaraugus County, New York. KVGC Radio Jackson, meet WGWE Radio Salamanca. Do you notice any similarity in the names here? Calaveras, Cattaraugus. I think that this was just meant to be. The county names have very similar sounds, and that's just the beginning. My hometown of Salamanca, New York, has a Spanish name, and it's on Seneca Indian land, the only city in the country located on a reservation, as far as I know. Calaveras is a Spanish name, too. It means skull, as in human skull. You New York Staters will have to keep listening, and sooner or later we'll get to the story behind that name. Both areas have strong Native American ties. Cattaraugus is from the Seneca language, and of course the Senecas are a tribe in the Iroquois Nation. As for Calaveras County, the Native Americans who populated this part of California are primarily the Miwok, Maidu, and Nisenan. Their influence is very strong here. Because this program is being broadcast from both cities, I like to think that Jackson, California is now sort of a sister city through the arts to Salamanca, New York, the town where I went to high school and had some of the same teachers who had taught my parents more than 20 years before. While I love California, I've never forgotten for a minute my hometown of Salamanca and my other hometown of Ellicottville. The two towns are just 12 miles apart, and they are located in some of the prettiest country I've ever seen. I'm so pleased to be bringing these two areas, Western New York and Calaveras County, together in this way. As those of you in each locale hear these broadcasts over time, you'll learn more and more about each other, and you'll find that there are lots of similarities to tie us together. It's going to be a great period of discovery. Before I introduce my guest today, I need to bring all of those who are new listeners, both in California and New York, up to speed on who we are and why we're here. This program, Manzanita Voices, is a spin-off of Manzanita Writers Press, which evolved from a writers group called Writers Unlimited that started in the nearby Calaveras County town of San Andreas in 1984. It was founded by a woman named Monica Rose, who you'll hear in next week's broadcast. Manzanita Writers Press is a nonprofit publishing company that got off the ground last year, and so far we've published 3 books, with 3 more planned for the near future. You can learn about them by going to our website. Please do. You'll learn more than just the books. You'll learn all about us. Go to www.manzapress.com. That's MANZAPress.com. While our publishing company is new, Monica and her group actually started publishing about 24 years ago with their anthology of poetry, short stories, and art and photography. The anthology is called Manzanita, Poetry and Prose of the Motherlode and Sierra. Volume 6 came out last year. And the publishing company and this program are named for the book. Manzanita Voices is a show where I have conversations with writers, not just the writers in our immediate group, but writers from all over. That brings me to our very patient guest for today, poet Kathy Isaac Luke. Kathy, thanks for being so patient during that long introduction. I'm so happy to have you here today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Linda, and I'm so excited to be on the first show to be broadcast on both coasts.
Kathy, you and I have a few things in common, and one of them is that neither one of us was born in California. Would you tell us where you're from and a little bit of your early life?
I was born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and stayed there through high school, and then I moved to New Orleans, where I got my nursing degree at Louisiana State University. I lived in the French Quarter for about a year after I graduated, and then one of my first jobs was I was in the Army Nurse Corps, and I was stationed in Germany near Stuttgart. I spent 2 years working at an army hospital there, and we were very fortunate to be kind of in the center of Europe, so I got to travel a lot when I was on long weekends or on leaves. And at that time, there were army bases and Air Force bases. Well, there still are, but at that time, there were very active bases scattered throughout Europe, and we would get to take flights when we could and when they were available. So I could fly to Spain for a week, and also we airlifted patients periodically to different hospitals, and I accompanied them. So I got to see a lot of Europe when I was there, and then when I was discharged from the service, I left in Europe and took a year to travel to India with a friend that I had met there, and we traveled overland to India and came back through the Middle East and through Afghanistan and Iran and Turkey and Greece. So I got to see a lot while I was young, and at that time the economy was such that the dollar was very strong, so a little went a long way, and you really could see Europe on $5 a day pretty much if you were traveling with someone else.
Oh yeah, I remember that book, Europe on $5 a day. You know, you were so smart to travel like that when you were young. Here I was a flight attendant for over 30 years with American Airlines, and you traveled a whole lot more than I have. It's amazing, and here you were a nurse. I wonder if any of our listeners out there are young men or women who are thinking of they'd like to have a career like nursing or teaching, but they want to travel too. And you've just talked about a wonderful way that can be done. I was a teacher as well as a flight attendant, and I became a flight attendant because I wanted to travel. But had I thought about it, had I, you know, given it a few moments of thought, I would have been able to travel as a teacher as well. So I think it's fabulous that you did what you did.
Yes, I was very well aware of how lucky I was and how I should get it all in, you know, as much as I could, because it did turn out that later, you know, you settle down, you get a family, and you're just not traveling around like that. So it actually shaped my life, all the different cultures I saw, and living in Germany and learning the language for 2 years, I got immersed in it, and I'm very grateful for those experiences.
Fabulous. Well, now, you've recently published a very beautiful book of poetry called Chrysalides, and I remember a chrysalis from Mrs. Guthrie's biology class at Salamanca High. A chrysalis is a cocoon, right? But the word is a little bit different from chrysalide. So would you explain what the difference is and why you chose that name for your book?
Well, Chrysalides is the title of the poem that ended up being the title poem for this book. So I wrote the poem some time ago. And chrysalides are actually the insect pupa that are contained in the chrysalis. So the idea was that they were in a quiescent state of protection, and there was the promise of their evolving. And I didn't actually think of all that when I wrote the poem. I chose the word because for the sound, mostly. I did know, you know, that it was connected to the chrysalis and the breaking out of the cocoon. And the title poem is very much about coming of age, and it tied together with a protected state. So when I was putting the book together, it came to be that title poem became the title of the book.
Okay. I wish our listeners could see this book, because I just love the artwork on the cover. The borders of the cover are a soft green, and they surround a watercolor that's done in pastels. There's a pool of water with plants growing out, lily pads with gorgeous pink pale flowers resting on them. And then in the foreground are tall, spiky plants. And on the one closest to the viewer is a magnificent dragonfly resting and possibly he's drying his wings. What's the story of that painting, Kathy?
The cover is a watercolor by Santa Cruz artist Dan Rutledge. Dan and my husband worked together for many years in the insurance industry, and during that time Dan was painting and having shows of his art, and when I saw this watercolor, I really wanted to have it for the book, and I was so grateful that he agreed that I could reproduce it for the cover. And while we were having a discussion about the art, Dan, who is very well versed in the life cycle of dragonflies, was telling me about the different stages that they go through. And I realized while we were talking that it would be good if I used that to organize the book, that the life cycles of the dragonfly could parallel life cycles of a human. And it was a really good way for me to tie the poems all in, because they weren't written with that in mind. They were kind of all over the map. And this was just a good way for me to organize them so that they had were unified. And so that's what I did.
And it works really well because it does mirror human life. You have a section, the beginning section is called Emergence, which is like childhood. And it goes on through there. We're going to talk about all those sections and their names and some of the poems in those sections in just a few moments, but we need to break now for some announcements. Before we do, I'd like to remind you to please go to the Manzanita Press website. That's www.manzapress.com to find out about our nonprofit press, the people involved, the books we're publishing, and all of our events that we're hosting around Calaveras County and beyond. And also, please, I would love to hear feedback from those of you who are listening. Get your impressions of the show, suggestions for other shows. And those of you back in New York State, please let me know that you're listening. I would love to hear from you. Old friends and people I haven't met, I just love being in touch with New York State. Email me at writers@kvgcradio.com. Think Voice of the Gold Country, kvgcradio.com. We'll be right back. We're back with Manzanita Voices. My name is Linda Field. I'm your host for the show. And today, my guest is Kathy Isaac-Luke, poet. Kathy, you've published your beautiful book of poetry, Chrysalides, and we were talking about it before the break. Would you tell us a little bit about the segments, and then quickly we'll read the first poem that we're going to be talking about?
Yes. The book is divided into five sections that parallel the life cycle of a dragonfly and the life cycle of a human. And it starts with emergence, which is childhood, and then the next phase is nymphs. And I had quite a few poems about women, and they fit nicely into nymphs. And when we were talking about the life cycles of dragonflies, I found out that they stay in the nymph stage very long. That's the longest stage of their cycle, which I thought was appropriate because I think we like to stay in nymphs as long as we can. And then I have a section called flight, which after the dragonflies have come out into the world, they take flight, and I used that section to put the poems that were suggested by my travels. And then I have a section called flame, which was kind of fudging it because that really doesn't relate to life cycles of dragonflies, but the metaphor of moths to a flame or insects being attracted to light gave me an opportunity to put poems that are a little edgier and that reflect danger. And then the last section is Circling Back, which are poems about settling down and domesticity. And I have poems in there that kind of reflect a more mature point of view. So those are the sections. And I will read the title poem, Chrysalides, now. Chrysalides. Even in the summer, with its palpable heat, our petticoats were starched so stiff they stood alone. At night, they crowded round our bedrooms like phantom flowers, giant brittle blossoms inverted for a dried bouquet. In mornings, they were layered over wire undergarments and garter belts so tight they cut into our thighs. Then, swollen and distorted, we conspired with one another at a distance. Before Elvis shook his shake and little Richard sang of girls named Sue and Daisy, boys huddling in corners wondered how to scale the walls of our domed fortresses and dreamed of peeling back stiff petals of crinoline and net. Aware of dormant music, we were restless in our strange cocoons. Our skirts whispered as we walked.
That's very, brings back a lot of memories. I certainly remember the garter belts and the crinolines. And I never thought of a group of girls standing together, perhaps whispering to each other in the corner of the gymnasium during a dance, would be like girls who were domed fortresses with all their crinolines sticking out. But I imagine that might be what the boys thought of us. Kathy, how about another poem?
Okay. This is a poem that I had fun with, and it's kind of related to myth, and it's called The Medusa's Hairdresser. Beauticians ran when they saw her coming, those snakes, ensnarled and matted, their tongues darting around the poor woman's neck and ears. But there was one who embraced a challenge, who understood everyone deserves a chance to be beautiful. It was she who offered Medusa a chair and swiveled it back to immerse the serpents in a bath of warm water, swirled with chamomile, lavender, and yarrow. She ran her fingers through their tangles, massaged them until their bodies were separated, docile and dreamy. Afterward, she towel-dried the aggregation and soothed them with just enough balsam. She handed a mirror to Medusa and watched her admire the way her anguine tresses undulated down her shoulders. Then she stood aside to say, "Never have I seen such a shine."
Medusa. Kathy, poems can vary in type from simple rhymes to complex constructions that have different meter or rhyme structures. Would you talk a little bit about a few examples of different styles and what their characteristics are? Wow. maybe that question is too complicated. It could cover a year of study. How about two or three of your favorites in style and variation?
Well, I don't write that much in rhyming poems or in form, although I do really admire people who do. It's just that it doesn't seem to be my talent. I took a course on formal poetry where we had to write sonnets and sestinas, and I wasn't really thrilled with the results of my doing that, although I do, know something about the forms. And I guess the closest thing that I have to form, because my poems are very much free verse, but I have at the end of the book a poem called Slipstream, and it's divided into three-line stanzas, and I can read that now.
Okay.
It's a poem that I wrote. It was after 9/11, and I was thinking about all the conflict throughout the world, and even locally, people divided into different factions, and was kind of hoping that we could all live in harmony and enjoy all that the earth has to offer. And I was in the Sonora Pass, just thinking about how nice it would be if we all could be connected and living together peacefully. So I wrote this poem, Slipstream. In the stillness of this clearing, where I go to puzzle how we arrived at this divergence, The only sounds that permeate are echoes of those who chanced here before us. The women kneeling at the stream, drawing water into a sheath of skins. The hunter paying homage to his prey. Then I know what is important are not these scraps of paper used to record each rite of passage. Not even these words, however carefully chosen. But the heed with which we honor connections threaded between us, the grace by which we accept our place in this unfolding.
Kathy Isaac Luke, you're listening to Manzanita Voices. I'd like to remind you to go to our website, www.manzapress.com, to learn about the publishing company. Also, please contact me through email if you would like at writers@kvgcradio.com. Kathy, I really enjoyed that poem. Your work has been published in quite a few anthologies, journals, and also online publications, and the list is really impressive. Do you remember when you first had a poem accepted somewhere and how you felt when you learned it would be printed?
I do, because it was a kind of unusual occurrence. I had been submitting my poetry to different journals, and a friend of mine told me about a poetry journal in Florida called Sarasota Review of Poetry that was accepting submissions. So I sent a few poems there, and I didn't hear anything for a long time, several months. And so I assumed that is often the case, that the poems had not been accepted, and that I would just submit them elsewhere. So shortly after I decided I was giving up, a friend of mine who lives in Florida, who is also a poet, and we attended, she's a very dear friend, we've attended several workshops together after we met in Iowa at the Writers Festival. She called me and said, well, congratulations on having your poem published in the Sarasota Review of Poetry. And I said, what? And she said, yes, I just read your poem. I just went to a poetry reading. A friend of mine from Lakeland has a poem in there, and she was reading them, and she read your poem. And I said, well, I didn't even know that it was in there. And she said, I said, which one is it? And she said, Hot Countries. And so I was thrilled, of course, but I was a little perplexed that I hadn't been notified. So later I met the editor. His name was Robert Abel. And he apologized and said he had kind of overlooked notifying me. But I was still just thrilled to have it in there. And that was my first poem that was published in a bona fide journal.
Are you going to read that one for us?
I will read it.
Hot Country?
Yes. Let me just one second. I have them
marked. I believe it's on page 34.
Thank you so much. Okay. Hot Countries. Here, where the white sun blanches everything, sky and stone and tree, she adjusts her camera lens, captures a washed-out scene. The outcome will show one dimension and will only hint at what was there. Her guide is young, his eyes an invitation. She is unsure if his smile whispers flattery or disdain. Dutifully, he leads her back to the rocky path. When she was younger, his company would have meant more than 1,000 poses beside a well-recorded shrine. Now she is tired. Her feet are puffy. Sweat makes trails down her calves, around her ankles. She wants only to rest, unwrap the painted wooden dolls she spent the morning bargaining for. Inside her spare hotel room, she leaves her cool bath, lies on top the narrow bed, a film of moisture on her body. Above, a noisy fan labors to move air, already heavy with vapor. Its faint breath, an incomplete caress. She wishes this journey over, wants to enjoy her photographs, exaggerate to friends about adventures in a culture she could never enter, even on a dozen stays. She wonders why it is the fate of certain women to travel to hot countries in the summer. The souvenirs surrounding her will later sit neglected on her ordered shelves.
Kathy Isaac Luke, reading from her book, Chrysalides. Kathy, we'll be back in a moment, but we have to break for some announcements. This is Manzanita Voices. I'm your host, Linda Field. It's such a pleasure to have you with us. Stay tuned. Listening to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and today my guest is poet Kathy Isaac Luke. We've been talking about her book, Chrysalides, a book of poetry that is divided into segments that deal with the cycle of life. I really like the imagery for your titles in this section of the book, Kathy. I think we can all relate to them because if we've made it this far in our lives, we've all gone through several, if not all, of those changes. The part of your book that you call Circling Back really touched me because, in a way, that's what's happening with me here. This program is helping me to circle back to my home in New York State and connect with it again and connect it to my home here in California. It's one reason that I think it's magical that you're on this show today. Would you like to read a poem from Circling Back?
Yes. I'll read, as I said, some of this comes into domesticity and nesting. And I wrote this poem. It's kind of loosely about housekeeping. It's called Solo Act.
Oh, I like this one.
This morning I watch an acrobatic spider build for herself a circus tent descending from a lampshade in my living room. So skillfully she hangs and swings, this practice trapeze artist, measuring with precision each length of cord, looping, doubling back to fasten, spoke to wheel of her symmetrical creation, a master plan to rival Wright or Wren. So what if I am labeled a negligent housekeeper? I will not sweep down these walls until they are abandoned, this glistening theater, this spider art.
Spider art. I have a lot of that in my home. You've given me a reason to leave it there. And I always do kind of admire the spiders and the wonderful artistry that they perform. There's another poem that you have in your book, skipping around a little bit, going back to, I believe it's in the flight section where you were traveling. It's about your career in nursing, where you talk about, well, I'll let you talk about it. The name of the poem is By My Lamp.
Yes, it's By My Lamp, inspired by Florence Nightingale, of course. And it sort of reflects the kind of conflict that I felt in my career from the idealized notion when I went into nursing that I would be helping people, being with them, comforting them, to the reality of being around all the technology, which is in recent years just become even more prominent. And this poem, I sent it off to a contest that was by a medical group in Texas, and this one, the contest was to show how technology alienates people in the medical profession from their patients. And I'll just go ahead and read it. By My Lamp. This is not what I wanted. Not this web of tubes and wires, this barrier between us. What I wanted was to lay my hands cool and firm upon your skin, to find your pain and banish it. This is not what I wanted, not these cavernous halls, these doors tinged with loneliness. What I wanted was to fill a basin with clear water, to wipe your forehead, wash your hands. Not what I wanted, not this treadmill leading from monitor to monitor while I adjust the ebb and flow of fluid, oil the delicate machines. What I wanted was to draw a chair close to your bedside, smooth my starched white skirts, and stay to offer solace throughout the dreamless night.
Oh, that's lovely.
Thank you.
And anyone who has seen someone in a hospital who is connected to all the machinery, I'm sure will identify with that. You have another one called Core Curriculum, which I think will touch a lot of people also, because we've all lost people in our lives, faced a death of a family member. And I thought your poem about your father's death was very touching.
Okay, read Core Curriculum. These things you must learn to do. Other things he taught you, like how to balance. When you wobbled on two wheels, he walked behind you, his hands outstretched as though their mere intent might interrupt the flow of gravity. You must choose the proper clothing. Do not pick his latest suit still wrapped in plastic. He saved the dark one from your wedding. When all eyes were upon you, your fingers found their comfort in the creases at the bend of his elbow. Where is it written that there must be gladiola? You are friendly with the florist. Order a spray of yellow daisies and wild iris. Mix them with a branch of plum he planted in the yard. This is the part I hate to mention, the matter of the casket. Someone can help you. Explain he hated polished furniture. Choose something comfortable, a soft and mellow wood. These things you must learn to do. Remember how he trusted that any task given to you, you would do it well.
And that was very well done. Kathy, I first met you through a group called Gold Rush Writers when I attended a workshop taught by you and Kevin Arnold. Would you tell us a little bit about Gold Rush Writers and how you came to be involved with them?
Yes. Well, Kevin and I worked together when I was a program director at Poetry Center San Jose, and Kevin was president of the board of directors, and he introduced me to Antoinette May and invited me to join the fiction group that Antoinette had in Palo Alto. And I did, and I went to the fiction group for almost a year, and I was more focusing on poetry at that time. I do write short fiction, but my poetry, I've had more success having it published, and I did want to do a book. And also, my husband and I were moving to Sonora. We bought a house in Sonora as our retirement home. And shortly after I left the fiction group, Antoinette moved to McCallum Hill after she married Charles Herndon, and we were in the same area. And so Antoinette and I, we still get together actually quite a bit, and she was founding the Gold Rush Writers, and she invited me to be a part of it, and I have been since actually the second year. I wasn't there for the first year, but I have been involved with it, and I have helped organize it, and also have taught workshops and met a lot of people, and that is how I met you and Monica
right.
Rose as well.
Yeah.
And it's just become a very important part of the year for me.
And it is for me, too. I've attended now several years in a row, and it gets better all the time. If our listeners go to www.manzapress.com, they can learn about when the next Gold Rush Writers is coming up. It will be next year. It's always in the
spring. It's always in the first part of May, last part of April, first part of May.
Yeah. And it's very worthwhile. If you want to be in the company of writers and get inspired and educated, it's really a fabulous experience. Also, it's located, as Kathy said, in McCallum Hill, which is a very small town on Highway 49. And if you're not familiar with the Gold Rush country of California, Highway 49, I think of it as a necklace with jewels studded throughout at little distances along the chain of the necklace. There's Jackson, there's McCallum Hill, there's San Andreas, Angels Camp. Further in the other direction, there is Coloma, where gold was first discovered. And there's Sutter Creek. There's so many gold rush towns. It's just a wonderful area to explore. So I recommend that even some listeners back in New York State might want to venture out here next year for Gold Rush Writers and spend a week or more enjoying the Gold Rush country. This is Manzanita Voices, and our guest is Kathy Isaac-Luke. Kathy, you've been a member of poetry groups, and you've taught poetry workshops. Would you tell us why these structures can be so helpful to writers?
Yes, well, they're particularly helpful when you're starting out because they help you learn what's being written on a contemporary basis and what's being published. And they're also helpful in, I think, focusing you on writing, because if you're going to be meeting regularly, you want to bring something to the meeting and have people respond to it. And also in the workshops I've attended, sometimes we do exercises and that generates new work. So they're important in very different ways, and also help you network with other poets and give you an opportunity to hear their work and support each other. As long as you pace yourself and don't let it become such that it cuts into your writing time, because you need to have that too. So for me, writing sometimes is very solitary, but when I have completed things, I do like to hear people's response to them and to get their feedback on how I can better make them better by revision.
That's right, because when we write something, we spend a lot of time with it. We write it, and then maybe we rewrite, and we come back a few days later and look at it again and do some more editing. But it's always our own eyes on the piece, and it's when you take your work in front of someone else, and they get to read it and hear it and give you the feedback, it's those other eyes coming to it fresh that give you new ideas and new ways to approach it, and it can be very, very helpful.
Yes, I have found it to be so, and it, there's always, you know, the safety net where you can take suggestions that work and then discard the ones that don't, and I think everybody likes the liberty to do that. You're the final arbiter in the end.
Yeah, that's true. There is that other aspect of it, because sometimes I've been in a group where people get kind of proprietary over what I've written and what I've presented, and they want me to do it a certain way, and I feel a little bit of pressure. But I have to remember that this is my work, and I have the final say in it. You're listening to Manzanita Voices. My guest is Kathy Isaac-Luke, and we're discussing poetry and writing and groups and all kinds of wonderful things. We're so happy to have you with us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Linda Field, and you're listening to Manzanita Voices. We're talking today with Kathy Isaac-Luke, who has brought her book, Chrysalides, a beautiful book of poetry. Kathy, we've gotten this far in the show, and I keep forgetting to ask you to tell the audience how they can get your book.
My book is on Amazon.com, and it's also available at the Mountain Bookstore in the Junction at Sonora. And if people do want to see the cover, it's on a blog that my daughter is developing for me. It isn't quite finished, but the cover is on the first page. And the blog is chrysaladespoetry.wordpress.com. And it's Chrysalides Poetry because I had told Linda earlier when I selected the title that there wouldn't be too many other books named Chrysalides. And as it turns out, There is a science fiction book called Chrysalidids, without the E on the end, that was quite popular. And also, there are several French books. There's a French book of poetry called Les Chrysalides, and also a book that I saw on Amazon that's about adolescence called Chrysalides, which I thought was very interesting that I hadn't even known about. So there were all these interesting synchronicities going on.
That's right. I think it must be a very popular image because it's a very beautiful idea. Chrysalides, by the way, is spelled C-H-R-Y-S-A-L-I-D-E-S. So what is the, if they go to Amazon, they ask, they click on, search Kathy Isaac Luke.
Yes, it's Kathy, K-A-T-H-I-E, Isaac Luke is hyphenated, I-S-A-A-C hyphen L-U-K-E, or you could just type in Chrysalides, and if you type in Chrysalides poetry, I think it'll come right up.
Yes, it probably will. Okay, well, we'll try to mention this again at the end of the show, so in case you didn't get to write that down, get your pencils ready. We'll be giving contact information later as well. Kathy, besides your writing and teaching poetry and nursing and everything else, there's another facet to your writing career. Now that you live in Sonora, you do theater reviews for the local paper, which is called the Union Democrat. You told me the other day about a really good play that you saw and reviewed recently. Would you tell the audience about it in case it comes to their area?
Yes, I'd love to. I think we're so fortunate in the Motherlode to have so many theater companies. When I moved here, I was just really impressed by the variety. We have Sierra Repertory Theater in Sonora, which does many really great professional performances. And there's also a smaller theater, Stage 3, in downtown Sonora, that's a very intimate theater with under 100 seats. And last weekend, I saw a play called August, Osage County, which runs there through August 7th. And it's a Pulitzer Prize winning play, a fairly recent one. It won in 2008. And it's just has so much impact because it's about the dysfunctional family to end all dysfunctional families. And the main protagonist, Violet, is a woman who is ailing. She has cancer and she's addicted to prescription drugs. And she goes back and forth between being kind of in a haze and then attacking her family with really vicious barbs. And the whole family has been damaged by the two parents. In the beginning of the play, the husband, the patriarch of the family, says, "I drink and my wife takes drugs. That is the bargain we have struck." And so from that, the whole, their three daughters are warring with each other and with the parents. And it's such meaty roles. The local actress Susan Michael plays Violet, the mother, and she just does a fabulous job. And then there are all kind of other interesting characters. Her sister, Maddie Faye, who is also insensitive and can be very cruel to the other family members. And then the relationships between the daughters. And here is this play that lasts 2.5 hours, but it goes by just so quickly, and you're left just kind of reeling with all of the emotion that's been conveyed in the performance.
Oh my goodness, just one big happy family. It just sounds like an evening in the living room for some people, I guess.
It goes back to, you know, back to such American classics as Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, or even some of Eugene O'Neill's plays, with these strong women who are very troubled and, you know, do damage to their families. And in the end of the play, I thought, well, we can all be relieved that we do not belong to this family. But yet there were so many incidences that I think people can connect to, you know, in smaller ways.
They'll relate on
skillfully done.
They'll relate on one level or another.
Yes.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Thank goodness it's not our families. That's just great. You're getting back to our poetry. You've been writing poetry for years and years. Do you have a favorite poem that you wrote, and would you like to share it with us?
Yes, a poem that I wrote fairly recently, and after a while, I kind of get tired of, you know, the older poems because I've read them so much, but this is a fairly recent one that I just had fun with, And it's called Alchemy. They didn't call it the silver screen for nothing. And you would know that if you ever saw Rita Hayworth move like Mercury across that 15-foot window into 40s Argentina, where her Gilda, wearing a strapless dress, pulled the scarf from around her shoulders and held it above her head while she shimmied shamelessly to get back at Johnny, whom she hated, hated so much she thought she would die from it. And all the men in the Buenos Aires night spot listened to her husky voice sing, "Put the blame on Mame," and stared at the way her gown caressed her impossible curves, while Johnny sat seething in the corner, inhaling his Chesterfields and rebuking himself for losing Gilda because of some thoughtless deed or misunderstanding that the movie had not yet revealed. Even though everything outside the cinema was not all right, every woman in the audience must have fantasized that she was dancing up there like Gilda, holding all the men in her life in thrall. And every man must have wished that he could hold Gilda's soft and lithe body close to his. And I imagine that when all the couples filed out of the theater, they must have walked a little lighter, believing that their lives might just turn out as happy as Johnny's and Gilda's did when they got back together at the end of the movie. And that wasn't just silver, it was gold.
It was gold. Wonderful. Brings back memories of those movies in black and white and the women with the wonderful gowns and simpler times, actually. You have another poem that I would like to hear, and that's called Annie's Walk, and I'd like to hear a little bit of the background. But before we do that, let's mention again, because I don't want to leave it out, Kathy Isaac Luke's book can be purchased from Amazon.com, and that if you just go and you do a search for Chrysalides, Chrysalides, poetry, you'll find it. And we'd like you to come to our website, www.manzapress.com, to find out about our publishing company and all the things that we're doing. And I really want your feedback. Please email me at writers@kvgcradio.com. Now, Kathy, you also have a blog that you, I've forgotten how to get to that.
It's Chrysalides Poetry, all one word, .wordpress.com. And it's a blog that doesn't have a lot of chats on it. It's just my book and different events where I'm reading and my bio. And my daughter did it. She said it would be easier for me to maintain than a website. So that's why we chose it. Plus, they don't charge it on WordPress. But if you go there, you can see the title of the book, and there's a link to Amazon and a link to the publisher, which is Dragonfly Press in Columbia. That is who published the book. Calder Lowe is the executive editor of that, and she's also moved here from San Jose within the past 3 years.
Like the name of the press, Dragonfly Press, it just goes right along with your book.
It really
And that beautiful dragonfly on the cover, it's perfect, just perfect.
And that wasn't planned either.
Oh my goodness, it's wonderful how some things just evolve.
Yes.
Like Chrysalides. Okay, well, you were telling me when we were driving over here together this morning, you were telling me the background behind your poem called Annie's Walk, and I liked it so much I'd like to ask you to read it and tell us about it.
Okay. When my daughter graduated from high school in 95, her English class had planned a trip to England for a literary tour of England, and I got the really rough duty of being a chaperone. And so they were just a delightful group of girls, and during the tour we happened to tour the Bronte home where Charlotte, Emily, and Anne Bronte, who Anne was the younger sister, lived. And I hadn't known about this, but a docent in the museum there was telling us about the brother Branwell, who was a sort of a black sheep of the family because he drank. He was a painter, and actually a pretty good one at that, because some of his work was on display. But because of his personal life, and there was a scandal involving a governess, I believe, and so the father came down on him really hard, and he didn't get the support in his art that the women of the family did. So we were walking down from the house on this cobblestone path, and I saw a pub, and I just kind of imagined that this would have been, just an image that happened. This is an imagined poem called Anne's Walk. Satin shoes with a button strap, no match for a sudden shower, little lakes forming in the path, only a short way to the cobblestone. A lucky thing the cook's son stopped by today. I heard them murmuring in the kitchen about Branwell in the pub all afternoon, in no condition to come home, especially in this rain, and with Charlotte sick again. If only I can catch the eye of some kindly soul who will escort him to the door for me. If only Emily can occupy Papa with a song before dinner, so I can spirit my brother up the back way before Papa can lay into him. About his lack of discipline, about his lack of talent. If only I can sneak him up the back stairs before Papa notices his condition, my ruined shoes, and the muddy hem of my skirt.
Ah, I feel so sorry for Branwell.
Yes, I did too when I heard, about his plight. And I later learned that Branwell was supposedly the inspiration for the character in The Graduate.
Oh, my
goodness.
Became
involved with the older woman.
Oh, yes. Isn't that interesting? I love hearing the background behind these works of art. Kathy Isaac Luke, it has been such a pleasure having you with us today. I want to thank you for joining us.
Well, it was my pleasure, Linda. Thank you so much.
This has been Manzanita Voices. I'm your host, Linda Field. Come back and see us again soon. And once again, welcome, New York.
You've been listening to Manzanita Voices, a production of the Manzanita Writers Press, an affiliate of the Calaveras County Arts Council.